Hey guys, welcome to episode 2 of Gen Talks. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Katie.
And today our podcast is called Failure is Not the Finish Line. Just a little bit about how failure can be used for good, how it's not the final word, and how we can overcome it and not let it bog us down.
Yes. So we will start with a fail on the last podcast. I messed up my own timeline. Which gives me grace when I hear other people tell their story. But I had said that the movie Erin Brockovich was what inspired me and made me want to be a lawyer that was for the greater good and was the voice for the voiceless. But when I looked back at the timeline, really what Erin Brockovich did for me, it was a visual and a story that gave words that I didn't even know were there when I was in high school and wanting to be a lawyer, although I lost the dream along the way. When I saw the movie Erin Brockovich, it reignited something inside of me. Like, that was that seed that was in me back then. So it was not what was planted, but it gave words to what was already there. And so I messed up my own story.
That's okay.
And how will I rise strong from that?
Yes. And we also, when I listened back, I couldn't help but laugh hysterically at the fact that we really failed at knowing who invented KFC chicken. Like, it's the easiest name ever, Colonel Sanders, and we Googled it. We had to Google it.
We did, and we
but
told
that's okay.
You.
It was a minor failure, but I got laughter and joy from it, so hopefully someone else did too.
Okay, and out of the two of us, one of us is a perfectionist and one is not. Do you know which one? I'm not the perfectionist.
I definitely am the perfectionist. So that's interesting talking about a topic like this with two totally different mindsets. Because I would have thought, but I thought that you were an extrovert and a perfectionist, and you're neither.
No, I'm introvert that is outgoing.
Maybe that's why we like click so easily, though, because we're opposite.
Yes, opposites do get along.
Yes, yeah, but we're a lot alike, too, so... but yeah, definitely a perfectionist. So this is something, failure is something that I have always really, really struggled with. I've always hated failure. Tell us a little bit about the book that you'll be referencing.
Okay, Rising Strong by Brené Brown is one that I'm reading now. And in this book, she references another book she'd written called The Gifts of Imperfection. So I started listening to that on a car ride. And she does a lot of shame research, and I heard her TED Talk on vulnerability, and it rocked my world. If anything, I've probably been guilty of being vulnerable too soon with the wrong people and been hurt, as opposed to one that built walls and never got vulnerable.
Yeah, I can identify with that.
It has helped through the years and the older I've gotten to find the sweet spot that if someone hurts me with my vulnerability, that it is on them.
Right.
And that walls keep out the bad stuff, but they also keep out the good stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
And I'm not willing to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
I do have more discernment when I open the floodgates of my heart. And when I got on social media, I was late to the game. I did not get on social media, really, thank you, Jesus, for helping me with this. Because I think I was so fearful of people when I straddled the fence in my faith and my life for so long. I did not like who I was. I knew enough of Jesus to not really enjoy the world. And I was enough in the world to not really enjoy a relationship with Christ. And I was so scared of what people thought and such a people pleaser. I would have never gotten on social media because I was afraid I'd be crucified. When my foot went over the fence and I decided to go full steam ahead with the Lord, doesn't mean things are perfect, but he is my everything. I felt like he said, I want you to take the journey before the people. And that's why I started blogging. And I didn't want to because, I mean, although I'm not a perfectionist and everything I would post, I would go back and find things I needed to edit out. And I would just go edit it before the people. And I felt like he said that was part of my journey. He's like, I want you to go back and leave everything you wrote in the beginning. And I want you to go back and edit it before the people. It gives people a me too. And that's something else from Brené Brown, is giving people the gift of me too.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I've heard so many different podcast, read the Me Too, and I think that is what, I know that's what connects people to me with my writing. It's like, oh, her too.
Right.
You know, and people don't know that by looking at your pictures or seeing you out because you're fine and you're good, but the Me Too, it just lets people know, like, she failed too, but she's fine.
Right.
You know, and I can be fine even though I fail. Because, unfortunately, some people think that their failure is so great that they have to end their lives. Or
which is a lie. Because if we're breathing in and out, there is nothing God cannot use for good.
That's right.
If we'll let Him.
Like the whole point of that failure is not the finish line. And
there's also, I find comfort in, like, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
There's no new sins. There's nothing, you know, hidden before God, which means He sees it and He still loves us and He's just waiting for us to climb in His lap. And by being vulnerable on social media, because everything when I started was me really filleting my heart before the people. And I was scared that I would get negative kickbacks. And I felt like He was saying it happens because the gospel's offensive to those that don't know me and are not coming to me. So where it's a sweet aroma to some, it will be a stench and offensive to many. And as I've gone along and just focused on what He took, and He was the only sinless one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, I can take criticism, you know, and hopefully learn from it, because there's going to be valid criticism.
Yeah.
I'm going to say things wrong. I'm going to get my own story wrong. But I want to grow from that. I don't want to be defensive. I don't want to carry offense around with me. And I'm learning, and I'm sifting through that, and I'm hoping that my filter is becoming more Christ-like and not Katie-like.
That's a hard line to kind of cross over to, because it can feel so much like a failure when someone criticizes you. I mean, I know there was one blog I wrote, I think it was like about my relationship with my fiance, and I had dozens of amazing responses, and this one guy I have no idea who he was, took the time to write a lengthy post, comment on my post about how terrible it was, how he disagreed with everything. And along the way, he just bashed God, Christians. So I had to, when I read it, that was the first time I've ever read a comment and didn't get upset. I read it out loud to my fiance, and I was like, he's really lost. So like you said, like, it's on him. He, you know, my wall was down, and I let him in, and I don't know him, and I'll probably never meet him. And it could have, like, destroyed me and felt like I have failed and I should never write again. But instead, I just took it as, okay, that was one post compared to the 12 that I got that were, you know, really happy that I wrote that they could read it.
We so often, or at least I have in my life, it's, I'll get 1,000 good from the people that are closest to me, and it's the one random hurtful thing that I will let steal the joy.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't want to do that anymore.
No, I have to really make a conscious effort. Because in my head, like, Satan, like, creeps in and says, well, of course, those 1,000 people that love you are going to tell you the good because they don't want you to feel bad. You know, I like let that lie kind of seep in and let that one negative comment win. And why should it? You know, especially when it's people you don't know saying good things versus people you don't know saying bad things. Why do we want the bad to win? You know,
right.
When we spoke with the lady at your house who's a publisher,
yes.
We had a really good conversation about that, and I don't remember what exactly she said, but it's like we, as humans, it's almost like a sick, twisted way of, like, obsessing over that bad thing and waiting for someone to tell us what we were afraid they would say. Like, we know there are good things, and we know we're doing well, and people are telling us, but in the back of our minds, we wait and wait, and it's like, oh, they finally said it.
And it's almost like a self-fulfilled prophecy.
Yeah.
And learning not to be a people pleaser, where I get all my weight from words of affirmation.
Yeah, same.
It's a journey.
Yep.
Okay, a quote from the book that is really good. It says, integrity is choosing courage over comfort, choosing what is right over what is fun, fast, or easy, and choosing to practice our values rather than simply professing them. So often, back to social media, we do see a lot of people just professing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I really pray that the things that I write are a reflection of how I live, and that I'm not one that just talks. and that the people that are closest to me, that I'd be the most famous in my own home. I've heard somebody else say that. It's my litmus test at home. Would they think I'm the most generous and kind and patient?
That's good.
Versus the world. And, yeah. You know, I hope that's what my husband would say.
Mm-hmm. That's really good, though. Because it's so easy to say things or write things on social media. And again, it goes back to people, you know, if you're always saying all the good, and it's not true, but you're putting off that image to people, and that's what they think. You know, they don't see that there are mistakes or that you're hurting. And especially, I think we run into a lot of people, like you said, professing something, and then if we know that they're totally not living that, that's not the testimony and, like, the legacy that we want to leave.
No.
That's why, I don't know, I'm the same with you. I'm very, very vulnerable with my social media, and I find myself comparing and being like, oh, her Instagram looks perfect, you know? There's no errors, no mistakes. And I look at mine, I'm like, oh, that was a really dumb picture with a dumb, you know, caption, or why did I write that blog and release it to the world? But so many authors, one of our favorites, Elizabeth Gilbert, she says, you know, just write it and release it, and then it's gone. You can't baby it.
Right, not to babysit it and yeah. watch it and see how it's received, that's not what we're asked to do.
Yeah.
That was huge freedom.
Yeah, that is huge, because that goes for anything. If you're writing, painting at your everyday job, you can't just dwell over something and wait for that response. You have to do it and do it well and then release it. And it, not everything you do is going to be the best thing you've ever done. You know?
No.
Some things you're going to look at. I mean, when I go and look through my blog, there's some where I'm like, oh, that was good. And there's some where I'm like, well, at the time, that was on my heart and I needed to release it and someone read it. Not thousands of people, but someone, you know, and I had to do it. And that's not a failure. But in my head, like in those weak times when my perfectionism kicks in, it's like, oh, wow, that got 4 views. Like, what a total failure I am. I should never do it again.
I do almost wish there were no metrics.
I know.
Where we could not see anything. And there's a quote that somebody said. that says, if we're not failing, then we are definitely not getting out there and risking enough. And it's something to that extent. But that's the only way that there's ever new discoveries, that we grow, is if we get out there and risk a little bit more. And have the hard conversations and risk being rejected and saying we're sorry when we need to say we're sorry, because there's no guarantee someone might forgive us. But to me, that's part of integrity.
Yeah, and saying it anyway.
Yeah, it's just really doing the hard work, because mm-hmm. it'd be a whole lot easier just to act like it never happened.
Yeah, and if you're not failing, then whatever you're doing is way too easy. Like, what does that say?
Integrity is choosing courage over comfort, choosing what is right over what is fun, fast, or easy, choosing to practice our values rather than simply professing them. I look at the one in particular, choosing what is right over what is fun, fast, and easy. We were at a football game several years ago, and as the stadium filled up and people were having lots of fun, the people behind us, there was a black family behind mm-hmm. them, and the lady sat on something, and he leaned forward simply to help her get her jacket out from under it, and her boyfriend was extremely racist. In my family line, I'm the only one sitting close enough to hear what's happening. My boys to my right could not hear anything. And I'm thinking, okay, it's starting to get ugly, and the racist boyfriend starts to be ugly to the precious family that's trying to help. She was about to fall off her seat, and at that point where it says you choose to do what's right over what's easy, and choosing to practice our values over what just professing them, I couldn't be complacent. At mm-hmm. that point, I had to cross the line. I had to get involved, and I turned around and I said, "You are being cruel. Your words are so unkind." And the man was drunk and stood up and started to get belligerent. At this point, my husband turns around and was like, "Get up, now we're leaving." He didn't know any of that had transpired. And so we get down, and officials were coming up because other people had called it in. And he's like, "What in the world happened? Why would you, you know?" And I said, at some point, when you hear something, if you don't get involved, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy, and it was entirely possible. I mean, the language was horrible. There was families everywhere. And the guy was about to get physical with me. I mean, it was bad. And I just remember my husband going, oh, my gosh, what in the world just happened? But I look back, and I am thankful nothing happened. But I couldn't have walked away knowing I did nothing.
And it would have been easier.
People were moving their kids. I mean, they were trying to get their little ones just away from the conversation. But at that point, I was like, okay, here we go. I'm getting in because now I know.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, you know, I look back on that, and there's those times in life where you're kind of at a crossroad. And it happened another time with my son, who was at a formal in New Orleans, and he said they got off the boat, and there was a man wailing on a girl.
Oh, wow.
And so he's talking to me after the fact, so I know he's fine. But then my next thought before he finishes the story is like, oh, please don't tell me you walked away.
Yeah.
You know, like, were you complacent? But they went and got a policeman who intervened and got the woman out. And I was so incredibly thankful because that could have gone so many different ways. Testosterone could have kicked in, and he could have jumped in the middle of it, and it could have gone wrong. But to be honest, I would have been happier with that one than him walking away and never saying anything.
Because who knows what would have happened to that girl. Yeah, that's the thing. We just have to do what we know we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Even if it could end terribly wrong, or even if nothing happened. I mean, even if you would have said something to that man, and maybe he doesn't ever... Maybe he'll never know what you said, but you couldn't
He probably doesn't.
He probably doesn't, you know?
He was so drunk.
But you had to say something.
Yeah, it was not. He was just out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Yeah.
And he was full of, I don't know if he was raised that way. He was clearly lost and angry. He was seething with hatred. And it was terrifying and so sad. But you can't. Once you know, then you're responsible.
Right.
So what do you do once you know? You have to get involved. And I don't know. Did we talk about the movie Pay It Forward last time?
I don't think so.
This is going to be a movie killer if you've not watched it. But it's the story of a little boy that they had a social studies project, and it was to come up with an idea that would change the world, and his was called Pay It Forward. And it was, if you did one random act of kindness for three different people, and the only stipulation was that they had to do it for three more people.
Yeah.
So you did it for three, and they all had to do it. And then he did the math, and he showed the concentric circles and showed how it would change the world. You go throughout the movie, and you see all these different life-transforming stories and the ripple effect of kindness. In the end, there's a bullying string that goes throughout the movie. And in the end, he jumps in the middle of a friend who is being bullied, and they have a knife, and he is stabbed, and he dies. And as I watch the movie, and you're sobbing, going, why does it have to end that way? There's a part, to me, it's such a Christ-like theme in it.
Yeah.
Is I'd rather, as much as I would hate to lose my child, and y'all, there's a candlelight vigil outside the house, and the mama sees the entire town show up, because he's a hero. Right. As I would much... rather my child jump in than walk away complacent. Yeah. And where to some, that would be a failure. Like, you gave your life away for nothing.
Yeah.
And that's like the ultimate triumph. It doesn't look like it from the world standards at times. But the pay it forward thought and living for the life of another is what you do.
Well, I think that's so like applicable with anything. If you're doing it for someone else and it doesn't work, or like... you lose, like he lost his life, but it wasn't a failure. Like, it's going to seem like a failure to so many other people, but when you really look at it, it wasn't.
It's like the upside down kingdom, like in the word where it's like the last will be first.
Yeah.
And you look at, is it Joseph? Who was in the pit?
Yeah.
Joseph, okay. Mm-hmm. Where that, what his brothers meant.
Yeah.
For evil, you know, God used it to save many lives, and that, you know, it would look like a huge failure that he's in a pit and he's in a prison, but God did something beautiful in all of that.
I think there are like so many different kinds of failures. Like, there are some things I failed and I wasn't doing it for the right reason, but God used it for good and showed me I didn't let you have that because you weren't doing it for me. And then there are failures where he wanted to show me, look at all the support you had. You know, look at all these people who love you. There's so many different ways you can fail, and all of it turns into good. And I think we just have to remember that instead of, because I know there are several things that I've done in my life, and I still think, like, I really, really failed. Like, I could have done so much better. I could have, like, won that or done that. And God just says, you know, okay, well, what did you learn from it? And every single thing I learned from. And there's a company, and maybe you've listened to this podcast too. I don't remember who it was, but anyway, she told about, there's a big company. It's not Google, but it's very similar. And he asks his employees, you know, on a weekly basis, okay, what did you fail at this week? And they have to tell him, you know, and if he says, if you didn't fail at anything, then you didn't do anything. You know, you should have failed at something because you should be doing things so on such a big scale that you should fail at something. You know, there should be a win in there somewhere, but there should be a few failures that you can learn from and move forward. And I love that. I was like, what if every boss thought that way? You know, like, you failed because you tried something new. You know, I think I'm a pretty safe person. Yeah, I was about to say, honest. I think a lot of us stay safe, and we think that's a check, like, we won that because we, you know, and for different companies I've worked for, you know, just something as small as their social media. Well, we're doing the same thing, you know, every week. If that's not getting us clicks or views or whatever, we have to try something different, and we may fail on that different tactic, but then we'll know not to do that one or the one before, so we keep trying, you know? And I just think that's just life. You keep trying, and a million things might never work, but then one will.
That's good.
You know? Yeah. And it's just, it's about overcoming. What did I read today that said, oh, the author of The Help. It was a quote from her. Catherine Stockett. It said, I wrote 60 letters to authors, and all of them rejected me, and the 61st didn't reject me. They accepted it. She said, what if I would have given up on number 15 or 25 or even 60? I mean, she wrote 61 letters to these authors, I mean, to these publishers. To these publishers. And the 61, that's a lot of letters.
And that book changed my life.
And that book changed thousands and thousands of lives. I mean, it seriously did. And I just really, really liked that. I mean, she could have looked at that as 60 failures, but those don't matter now. You know, that one, there was one out of 60. That percentage is, I don't know what, but it's terrible.
Right. you wonder, like, what makes someone keep going?
Yeah.
Because I often think, okay, whatever doors God shuts, you know, he'll open a window. Or
yeah.
So I'm going, okay, God, are you shutting the door? Or is it the enemy putting up an obstacle so that I don't press through?
That's really, really hard to discern.
It is. It is hard.
I think that, because I deal with the same thing. I'm like, okay, if this thing hasn't worked 50 times, then maybe God doesn't want it to work. But I just think that there's something in our soul that God gives us that he lets us know. When we really pray about it, when we really think about it, like, no, keep going. You know, keep going. I think that on the flip side, there are things where you should just stop.
Yeah, because absolutely. There's plenty of things. I mean, he allows us, you know, to go and then, you know, wait till we turn. And that's just part of our journey.
Yeah.
Okay, one more quote from this book.
Yes.
This was so good. It said, regret is a tough but fair teacher. To live without regret is to believe you have nothing to learn, no amends to make, and no opportunity to be braver with your life.
That's great.
So true. I have lots of regrets.
Yeah, me too. But I think I just recently actually wrote a blog about, like, my regrets in college. Like, how I wish I would have lived it totally differently, you know?
Yeah.
But I think so many people are like, oh, no. Like, I would do it all over again the same. And they think, what is it? People always say, live life with no regrets. Well, no.
No.
You know, you're not learning anything. And if I could relive it, and I will tell my kids, hey, I did this and it was awesome, but I really wish I would have done this.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll do it differently. That's the point.
It's a tough but fair teacher. That is so true.
Yeah.
And, like, recently I told my daughter, like, my full testimony, and at the end of it I told her to look me in the eye, and I said, do you see any shame? And she said, no. And in a nutshell, I was like, it does not mean there's not regret.
Yeah.
I would do things differently, mm-hmm. but I'm not crazy, which means I know I can't.
Right.
But wise people learn from their mistake. Wiser people learn from others.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to walk this road. It's been walked. And this
That's
is
good.
What I've learned. And, you know, lessons that you, you know, when you lose or you do something mm-hmm. you regret, the only loss there is if you lose the lesson from it.
Yeah. And I like that you said, like, okay, to your daughter, look at all these failures I had, but I'm not ashamed. There's no shame. No,
shame is attached. Not from God. That no, is huge. Now, that's huge. I'm guilty when there's things I'm 100% guilty of. Like, mm-hmm. I did it. That means I'm guilty. But I also admit my guilt and I make amends where possible. I love that. It says, yeah. You know, nothing, it is to believe you have nothing to learn, no amends to make, and no opportunity to be braver in your life. There's lots of amends that I have made. There's some that I pray God still gives me the opportunity to make.
Mm-hmm.
There's no guarantee they'll forgive me, but I pray that they do, because when I don't forgive, it's only poison to me.
Right.
And I do hope I get braver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I hope everyone should have. And I think that goes hand in hand with a lot of failure. I mean, with every failure that you have, you get braver and braver. If you look at the things you failed, to me,
you get up and you're yeah, fine. I'm you not went, dead.
I'm doing it again. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when I look at like my timeline of failure, the things I did and I tried or shouldn't have done, whatever, they got bigger and bigger. So the good things were like the task at hand was just bigger than the last one before. And things that weren't great that I shouldn't have done and that counted as a failure to me, you know, the lessons got better and better. You know, it never declines. You know, you're always getting better and braver. I think that's really good.
I have found through life that God will continue to give me the same test until I pass it.
Yeah.
Out of his kindness.
And there are like, some tests that what I passed. What are you doing?
Yes. And I will not forget the mm-hmm. test. So I don't mind going back and seeing the scars and remembering the healing and going back and getting messy with other people that are still going through it.
Especially when it's one you've had. To me, I recently have noticed a test that I've been given 100 times. And I'm like, okay, I'm not doing something right. It's like the whole premise is like, I get an opportunity. I'm really impatient and pray for something to change. And then God gives me like 3 choices. And I'm like, why are you doing that? And I still really don't know the answer. I mean, it could be as simple as,
hey, he is a God that gives us choices. Like, he yeah. does. He doesn't want to be a dictator. Because I begged him, take that's my good. Free that's will. Good. I'm like, please, yeah. take my free
just
will.
Just tell me. That's good, though, that he's not trying to be a dictator.
No.
In the best, yes, by Lisa Turkers,
uh-huh.
it says, I gave you 3 good choices, so just pick one. They're all going to lead to the same other road. They're just 3 different ways you can go, and none of them are bad. And I was like, oh, like, I really was just like, I can pick either one of them. Right. It's not going to be, none of them are bad.
Right.
You know, you're going to notice if one is wrong.
And he'll redirect. And
yeah.
He'll say, just stay with me. Stay dependent on me.
That was a big lesson. I feel like I'm in it. I'm learning it. But, and that's another thing, you know, picking what we think might be the wrong road is not a failure because he's going to redirect us. And I've really had to learn that and be like, you know, another one of those cliche things, but we're not big enough or wise enough or smart enough to mess up his plan.
No, we're not.
He always, his plan stands.
Yes, in all of eternity. I mean, the gospel has won. Mm-hmm. I mean, the victory is won. We're the ones on the, right, on the timeline. He sees beginning from end.
Yeah.
Okay, last quote.
Yes.
This is good. There is no greater threat to the critics and the cynics and the fear mongers than those of us who are willing to fall because we have learned how to rise.
Oh, that's good.
Renee, we love you.
Yeah, Renee, oh,
that
she is good.
Deep. Okay, we have not learned to rise totally. We are still learning
yeah.
to rise. But there are some areas that we have learned.
And we're willing to fall. That is
absolutely.
That's good. To be willing to fall is a really beautiful thing because God is always there to pick you up.
And realizing that failure is not our finish line.
It's not the finish
line.
Okay,
lightning round.
Yes.
Okay, 3 questions. When you think of high school, what was the first song that comes to mind?
Oh, you go first.
First song that comes to mind is Video Killed the Radio Star. It was the first video on MTV.
Love
so it.
It
was the sign of my times in the 80s, and that one comes to mind first.
I don't know why this just came to mind, and I'm embarrassed, but I don't even remember who sang it, but Cyclone It's like, she moves her body like a cyclone. I don't even know who sings
that.
She moves her body like a cyclone. <It's> like, why do I think of that? That and just those like really cheesy rap songs, like I'ma buy you a drink, like these like T-Pain songs, like that's what comes to my mind.
Drank.
Yeah, buy you a drink. Yeah, yep. I don't know why, but that's
okay.
It.
Second one. This is the we're trying to keep these three questions in one: cultural, spiritual, and then relational, like family.
Mm-hmm.
But the second one, spiritual. This one's a little less deep than the first one I had, so I'm choosing it. But someone outside of your family that lived differently, had a light that was inside them, and in hindsight, you look back and go, they had a relationship with the Lord.
That's good. They can still be alive.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I think I've just learned a lot from my grandmother, my Gigi. She's had a couple, this ties in perfectly with failure. She's had a couple of failed marriages, and you know, I think divorce is like, people get so much shame from that. And she has. And while no, that's not of God, I think that he can use that failure to make good.
He will use absolutely anything we put at his feet.
Absolutely. And I have seen her really struggle, now that I'm old enough to understand, really struggle with it, have some dark times. But now she's married to a really great man who I know for a fact she'll be married to forever. And she found him when she was a lot older, you know, than I am. But I have seen God's redeeming love through all of that. And so that's been really
beautiful.
Cool. Yeah.
What do you call your grandmother?
Gigi.
Gigi.
Yes. We have the same birthday. We're like, we're tight.
My mom was Gigi.
Okay.
And Jay's mom is Gigi.
Gigi.
So my kids have a Gigi.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. My one person that mm-hmm. is my best friend's mom, Gail. She was the first person that I saw every morning. She was on her couch with her Bible and a cup of coffee. So I didn't know then. I knew she called it quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw her life radically change through the years. She was a single mom, and she and Sally spent the night with me all the time. And they, you know, I saw the power and the love of Christ through her.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, last question. This is the relational or family one. What is the first family pet that you remember?
Oh, also, this was my Gigi's dog, but they bought it for me. His name was PJ. Okay, and see, I don't really like animals now. I don't have a pet. I don't want a pet.
And my two shih tzus are sitting at her feet.
But they're fine. They're totally chill. PJ was his name. Puddle Jumper is what it stood for. He was a little chihuahua. And, I mean, people, when they hear this story now, they're like, what? Because I'll barely touch a dog. But he would sleep with me. I just hung out with him all the time. PJ was my favorite dog ever. And I joke, but it's true, he's the only dog I ever loved. And he got hit by a car. I cried for days.
Please tell me you didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
Thank you.
But I cried for days. I called my best friend. I was like, my dog died. Yeah. Anyway, PJ, he was the only
dog. Okay, and mine was Queenie.
Queenie
was a dog down the street that was half German Shepherd, half Collie, and it loved my brother Eric so much that the family let us have Queenie. So, Queenie, I think, was already in the family when I came along. My brothers were 8, 9, and 10 years older, and I remember when Queenie died. I got a Schnauzer when I was 10, and shortly after that, Queenie passed away. So I had them together for a little while, but I loved Queenie. She was great. We had a worn place in the carpet. She only came upstairs when it rained. She was just
That's
the best.
That's sweet. Aww.
Well, okay. That is the
That's
end
it.
Of episode
yeah.
two. Failure is so not the finish line.
It's not. So keep going.
Rise strong.
Overcome it.
Peace
All
out.
All right. See you guys next time. Subscribe to our blog.
Please, please. And, I mean, to the podcast. It's a blog.
Oh, shoot. There's a failure to end to wrap it all up. Subscribe to the podcast.
If anything, you should feel better about yourself
yes.
after this.
After listening to all our failures. Okay, bye.
Bye.